Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler, Devitt here with you. Jeff was preaching my language there, Tony. I love it. A little fantasy talk early, man. It's never too early for me. I have done several drafts. I heard him talking about Todd Gurley. Gurley said, we mentioned that yesterday, he said Antonio Brown or Cam Newton, only guys you could possibly take over me in fantasy. Don't take your quarterback that early, people.
No.
All right, today we'll get into a number of things, including Shad Khan giving an interview to USA Today Sports. Tom Pelissero wrote the coverage about that. Nothing earth-shattering in there, but he said the Jaguar fans have suffered long enough and should expect a competitor this year out of the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll get into the specifics of exactly what he said in regards to that. The Isaiah Crowell story is just an ugly, ugly one. He, the former Georgia Bulldog, now a member of the Cleveland Browns, tweeted out a, let's just say, controversial picture, and we'll get into that as well. Question of the day today is brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Automobile Dealerships, and we ask you, who is your current favorite? In other words, someone who's playing right now, current favorite NFL player that does not play for your favorite team, and why is that player your favorite player, right? So it doesn't mean if you have to be a Jags fan. Whoever you're a fan of, you can state that in the reply and say, despite that, I am a fan of so-and-so because X, and that's what we're doing today. As far as that goes, you can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler. Also, the Jaguars Today Facebook page up and running with that question, 641-1010. The phone number and the text line, driven by Duval Ford, comes in at the same number, 904-641-1010. Tyler, what is the best way, other than, I mean, if here's the issue I have with Twitter, okay? Unless you're looking at it at that moment, okay, or someone includes you, like you check your notifications in
you
a tweet.
Tagged, right?
Right, you get tagged in a tweet. You're never going to see, if you follow any amount of people, you're never going to see what anybody says, right? Well, unless you're like following like a basketball game's on and you're watching Twitter and people are commenting and you're like, well, damn, LeBron, whatever.
Right, they do have features. Like the hashtag is actually meant to have you click on it and then
see
things.
Right, and then you can search it.
Nobody uses the hashtag for that, though. They also have lists.
But you're right.
Never use lists.
People need to know, though, to go to that hashtag. My point being,
it's very hard to find something that was maybe a couple hours ago in your timeline, right?
We discussed this yesterday briefly, and I want to help people out because people care about listening to the program, and I appreciate that. So I'm trying to not get frustrated, but every day I get a new group of people saying, how come we have not uploaded episodes of the Jaguars Today podcast into iTunes? We don't do that. The Jaguars do that, and I'm assuming since we're in the midst of July and there is truly nothing going on in the National Football League, that probably the digital team is on vacation. God bless them. And they do a great job getting the show up. I want to find a more effective way to communicate this because, obviously, for people who only listen to the podcast, they're not hearing me say this right now.
And I know you're probably tired of responding to the same question over and over on Twitter. So how about this? How about we tweet out the best way to find it is always on 1010XL.com, and you put it as your pinned tweet on Twitter.
Oh, you can pin a tweet.
You can pin a tweet at the top of your page. That was the first tweet they see, and you never have to respond to that question again.
See, I assume people don't go to my page. Why would you go to my page?
But you're like a local celebrity here in Jacksonville.
But even so, that's more apt for Tony. Why would someone go to Tony's page?
To get the latest and pertinent Jaguars news.
But wouldn't they just ask Tony, if they wanted to know something like that, wouldn't they just tweet to Tony, hey, Tony, you know, why aren't you doing a better job uploading this podcast, Tony?
Or maybe some Braves thoughts or some movie opinions, you know, whatever Tony's interested in, they want to get his insight.
Maybe.
I don't know what to tell you.
I guess. Do you go to people's Twitter pages and read their tweets? I mean, I guess I have
from
on occasion.
To time, yeah.
Right. Like if there's a story that links a tweet in there and I'll go click on it and see what the commentary was or what have you. But I'm not like regularly going around like I'm going to click Rappaport's page and see what's on Rappaport's page. I figure it will filter down to me quickly enough because once it's tweeted out, somebody's going to pick it up and post it on a more conventional type website, something like that.
Bottom line is you can always get the 1010XL Jaguars Today program podcast.
Thank you.
On 1010XL.com.
Now, is it a podcast on 1010XL.com?
We can call it a podcast.
We can call it that. I know we could call it a lot of things.
It's not really the best of or anything. It's just kind of
hours. You don't download it onto your device.
You can do it through 1010? Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. Then it would be a podcast.
The SoundCloud app, correct.
All right. Super. All right. So it's there. That's what I try to tell them, but I miss some, I feel. Like, individually, they all ask me individually because they don't know, and I appreciate, again, the interest And I'm just looking for a more effective way to communicate that right now. I assume the folks down at Everbank are on vacation.
Duval Doom says he goes to your page on Twitter because you still have the beautiful Mike Dempsey Show logo.
I do. I like that
two
logo.
And a half
that
years
logo's badass.
Old.
Even though it says 1 to 4 weekdays, something like that, Monday through Friday. It's a badass logo. I
it
like
is
the
a badass logo.
Logo. And people see the logo and they know, oh, that's me. You're used to seeing people's different little avatars, right? Is that
maybe we can get someone out there in Jaguars Today listener land to Photoshop Jaguars Today and that circle around Mike's, you know, in that ring around your head and the logo?
I don't know, man. I just need
no, you're,
I need,
keep it.
You know who Mark Watson and the crew over at Hardball Creative came up with the logo, I believe. Actually, that might have been a Spectrum Films creation, actually, back in the day. I don't know. I have to go back and look. We can teal that thing up too, Tony, I figure. And anyway, moving along. No, Doom, I don't read your page ever. And I see you enough in my timeline. Anytime I go to Twitter, there's three things from Duval Doom in the last half hour. He's one of these guys. He's like my sister. I am at such and such a place drinking such and such a beer right now.
Or eating burrito.
Eating a po' boy sandwich or something like that.
He's a cran burrito guy.
Is he?
Cran burrito, margarita, peach moringa, mango morita, whatever.
We'll have to have that in for his 10th appearance as a co-host on Jaguars Today. What else did I leave out, Tony? There was something else of major importance. Oh, yes. We got Jim Wyatt of the Tennessean in Nashville. He's going to join us to talk about the enemy an hour from now. The Tennessee Titans is next up on the schedule. We take them team by team, week by week. We'll talk Titan football because you got to. Coming up in the next hour, and what are their expectations for a big leap for Marcus Mariota and company in year two with their new signal caller there? All right, we take a time out here. If you want to get on board, I've given you all the ways to do it again. The question of the day is this. Who is your current favorite NFL player that doesn't play for your favorite team and why? Share your thoughts with us on that and other things. We'll get into what Shad Khan had to say to USA Today about the Jags fans and what they should expect in 2016. We'll do that next. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, here we go. Mostly SEC Media Days free for the next hour and 40 minutes, but hackers on the scene as are Frank Frangie, Brady Ackerman, and a host of others, Tony, for afternoon-long coverage of all the breaking stories coming out of Hoover, Alabama.
Yeah, Georgia up right now.
Are they?
Yeah.
Right now. Couldn't tell you a whole lot about Georgia this year. Couldn't tell you a whole lot about the SEC this year. I'm telling you, man.
New coach.
Slipping away. I know that.
They got the big quarterback recruit in Eason coming out of Washington, despite the fact that Rick left.
Right. Is he going to play this year?
Probably at some point.
Yeah. That's all I got for you. And you gave it to me.
So, Nick Chubb should be back.
That's true. We're coming off the injury.
Yeah.
I guess I know a little bit more now that you remind me of the top headlines for the Georgia Bulldogs. I find myself paying less and less attention.
What bulldog are they on right now? Is it like 5?
I think it's more than that.
More than that, like
much
9 or 10?
Yeah.
Something like 9 or 10. Just Google it. How many Uggas have there been? That'll answer your question for you.
Mm-hmm.
I will get to that Shad Khan interview in USA Today. It's not just a straight Q&A, but a piece about the Jags. And we'll do that in a moment, but let's get a couple calls in. 641-1010, question of the day. Who's your favorite player that doesn't play for your favorite team in the NFL and why? Let's go to Rob in Glen St. Mary. Hi, Rob. How are you?
Good morning, guys. In answer to your question, my family's favorite team is the Jags.
All right.
But my favorite player is Alex Smith of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, really? How come?
Well, he was a great college quarterback, and he looked like he had started to have a decent career in San Francisco. He got injured. Now, everybody knows the unwritten rule was if starting quarterback got injured, when he recovered from the injury, he got his job back. But we all know what happened out in San Francisco. He come out to Kansas City, and I have to admit that Andy Reid has done a whale of a job to bring out that boy's skills.
Yeah, he's playing well. I mean, he's never going to blow you away with the eye-popping stats. But, Rob, thank you for the call. I mean, Alex Smith is fashioned a nice career for himself after looking like he was going to be a borderline bust early on. Tony, I'm not, you know, look, Drew Bledsoe will tell you that old wives' tale isn't holding. He got hurt. Tom Brady came in, and the rest is history. And it was hard to argue, I think, with San Francisco's approach when Colin Kaepernick had him within you know, he had four opportunities from inside the five to win the Super Bowl. This didn't connect with Michael Crabtree. And, you know, it was that close to being Super Bowl champs. But Alex Smith, remember that game? I want to say it was against New Orleans that he had. Was just absolutely out of this world in the postseason. I'm going to look up the numbers on
that. Yeah, he had a rushing touchdown. The long rushing touchdown.
Yeah. But he really just piled up numbers.
And that's when they were going back and forth. That was a heck of a game.
It was. It had to be in 2011. I'm looking for. They've redone, I'm sure you've noticed, Pro Football Reference a little bit. So it's not as easy. At least I have not figured out yet where to find the game logs that used to jump out at you right at the top of the very first column. But I'll work on that. It's my own personal cross to bear today. Rob, thank you for the call. Let's go to Tony out in Middleburg, wants to answer the question of the day as well. Good morning, Tony.
Yeah, I'm a big Jags fan myself, but my favorite player is Cliff Averill.
How come? Just a local kid made good or what?
Well, local kid making good, and I've seen some of the good things that he does out of Clay High School. I have a grandson that plays out there, so, you know, he just had a camp out there that he did it for free for about 300 kids, and I just, you know, I like watching him on the field. I think he's a beast.
Hey, you know what? Good enough reason right there. He's a very good player, and, you know, it's nice to see the local kids make good, and he is one of many, Tony. We see we've had Cliff on in the past. Mm-hmm. He does camps here every summer and stuff like that, so that's a good enough reason for me to root for a guy, you know, a local kid who's giving back to the local community. I found the game logs. Now I'm sorting, and I'm telling you, I'm all over.
I got it.
You got it? Give me some numbers, please.
Against New Orleans, he was 24 of 52, 299 yards, three touchdowns through the air, and had the rushing touchdown of 28 yards.
That's a lot of passing attempts to get to 299, yeah. Though, right?
That's kind of the story of Alex Smith.
24 for 52, so not super efficient.
42.
Oh, for 42?
Yeah, 24 of 42.
Okay, well, that's not that bad then.
No.
I thought you said
57, 299, three touchdowns, plus he added the one on the ground.
Oh, yeah. If you're going to put scores on the board like that, that's plenty efficient.
And they won 36-32.
Right. And, gosh, was it his rushing touchdown that won the game? I want to say it was. Or at least the clincher. Maybe put him ahead for the final time.
I think it was.
Kind of thing. That was a hell of a performance. And it was the next year, I think, right, that they got knocked out, I want to say, the next week in the postseason by whomever. And then the next year was the year they brought in Kaepernick, and eventually he took over. They just didn't think or was Kaepernick on the roster?
He was on the roster. That was his rookie year, I believe.
Okay, so he was already there, but they wanted to basically get something out of their investment in Colin Kaepernick. They were looking for a reason to do it. Let's not forget how good Colin Kaepernick was at times, particularly in the postseason. What did he run for against Green Bay? Like 170-plus, which had never been done by a quarterback before. So.
Looking back at the scoring log from that playoff game, Vernon Davis had two touchdowns in the game that day. The deciding score came on a 14-yard pass to Vernon Davis with 9 seconds left in the game.
A pass to Vernon Davis.
Yeah, that was after, let's see, Alex Smith rushed in from 28 yards out with 2:11 left in the fourth quarter to give him a 29-24 lead. Jimmy Graham caught a 66-yard touchdown pass 30 seconds later, basically, to give New Orleans back the lead. And then a minute and a half later, with 9 seconds left in the game, Vernon Davis caught a 14-yard touchdown
I think people
pass.
At the time were saying that reminded them of Steve Young to Terrell Owens, Green Bay, right? Remember that famous pass he hung on to? It got blasted in the end zone in the final play of the game. That seems to come back to me right now. Ron Jaworski, remember, at one point said, "I truly believe Colin Kaepernick could be one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. I love his skill set. I think the sky's the limit." That was after the Super Bowl run, where he came up a play short against the Baltimore Ravens. Let's get Marcus in Mandarin next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning. Good morning. How are y'all?
We're great, buddy. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm so excited to see what the Jaguars are going to do this year. I love the Jags. Go Jags.
Yes, sir.
Well, my favorite player is Dez Bryant. A lot of people may think that he's a a-hole, a bully, or he has some type of tendency, but he really doesn't, man. He's just a passionate guy who wants to win. Like, he's a baller. When he got into that little spat with Tony Romo, if you turn on the clip and you really hear what he's saying, he's letting Tony Romo know that they're great and that they can win, and he's just passionate about his team. And I love that, man. If we had Dez Bryant here, I mean, I would be ecstatic. I mean, I'm grateful what we have now, but I just love Dez Bryant's passion, man.
All right, Marcus.
I love his passion.
Appreciate it, man. We love your passion for the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's awesome. You know, I do think that Dez could tone it down a little bit, but I do think Marcus is right, Tony, that it seems like all of his sideline outbursts have been like, hey, don't give up. I know we're down. We can still win this game. We're not playing up to our potential. Snap out of it. That kind of stuff. Now, after a certain point, you're like, Dez, you know, we get it. You're not the only one who cares about winning here. We just don't all express it, you know, on a live wire type situation like you do. But I do think, for the most part, his heart's coming from the right place. I think sometimes I'd like to see him tone it down just a little bit, because I could just imagine, as a teammate, you get the same thing over and over and over. It could wear a little bit thin.
Yeah, look, I like Dez. And this is a league where it feels like the personality's almost being driven out of it at this point. And Dez is one of those guys that brings it back. It's kind of like I really want to love Cam Newton. Right? Like, I want to love Cam Newton, and it's why I was so disappointed with the way that he handled everything after the Super Bowl, because he had burst onto the scene as this superstar, and it was so much fun to watch him, the way he carried himself on the field. There's not a whole lot of guys, especially at that position, that are doing the kind of things that Cam Newton does with the demonstrative first downs and all that kind of... I enjoy watching that, the personality on the field in the game. I think Dez handles it about as well as you can with a guy with a personality that big on and off the field, where it's just... it's who he is, right? And his heart's just being worn on his sleeve about how much he cares about winning games. And sometimes it comes across as a little bit of a, you know, let's tone it down, Dez. You know, Tony Romo's not the enemy here. You know, and it feels like it comes across that way sometimes. But I don't think it's ever that he's really mad at Tony. I think he's upset that they're not winning as much as he thinks they should be winning. And I'm completely 100% okay with that.
To bring it over to what's really important here, I've been, as I mentioned to Jeff, in a couple of fantasy drafts already. And in one, I had the sixth pick, right? And truly, this year, in most leagues, you're going to see Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham, and Julio Jones in some order, usually Brown first, and then the other two in whatever order, as the first three picks in many, many leagues. So I'm sitting there at six thinking, oh, Le'Veon Bell's going to be gone. Maybe Todd Gurley's going to be gone. Do I go like David Johnson or DeAndre Hopkins or A.J. Green or something like that? So then somebody goes A.J. Green at four. I say, oh, okay. And then they went Dez Bryant. Somebody went at five, which I think is a big risk this year. He's coming off injury. Can you count on Tony Romo to stay healthy at this point in time? I think they want to get back the pound and the ball with Ezekiel Elliott now in the backfield. I don't know. I just thought that was a little rich for my blood with somebody else. Take the chance. I'd rather have DeAndre Hopkins, put it that way, than Dez Bryant.
I probably would too, but I mean, even when DeMarco Murray was going nuts, Dez Bryant scored 16 touchdowns.
Understand what he's capable of, but I just think the dual injury risk of his own and Romo's, a little too much for me to take him in the top five with all those other options out there. Let's get Tommy on the south side. I promise you I will get to the Shad Khan interview column written about him in USA Today. You may have seen it yesterday. Tom Pelissero wrote it, and we'll get into some of the details of that. But let's get Tommy on the south side as we close out this segment on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Tommy.
Good morning, guys. How you doing? Love your show, man.
Thank you, bud.
You're doing a great job. My favorite team is the Jaguars. Go Jags. I'm so excited for the season. And my favorite player is Larry Fitzgerald, and almost favorite coach, Bruce Arians. I just like the guy.
Have you seen, what's the name of the new series?
All or Nothing.
Have you seen that All or Nothing on Amazon yet, Tommy?
I haven't. I got to check it out. I got to do that.
I haven't seen it either. Tony says it's been very good.
It's good. Yeah.
I think all those shows, the NFL's done a good job with all those kind of things. So I'll have to check that out. Why Larry Fitzgerald, though, in particular for you?
Just kind of quiet. He's good in the community. He's good with other players. A lot of other people like, you know, other players like him too. And he just does his business and carries himself well. And he's a great player.
Probably not going to find a bigger advocate of Jerry Sullivan's coaching than you will in Larry Fitzgerald, and that says a lot. One of the best in the league.
Sure does.
Yeah, man. All right, hey, Tommy, we appreciate it, man, and it's coming soon, buddy. Less than 3 weeks, we'll see him out there on the field.
All right, man. Y'all have a good one.
All right, you too. Tommy on the south side, thank you for checking in.
You know, it was kind of an interesting, you know, I watched the whole All or Nothing series over the course of the weekend.
You finished it, really?
Yeah, I watched all eight episodes.
Good.
And it's kind of a weird thing because it's not like training camp, you know, with like the Texans last year. I know the end.
Right.
You know, like,
they're gonna melt down.
I know, like, everything that they're leading up to and all this all or nothing, and it's Super Bowl or bust for this team, and I'm watching it going, I know that you're about to get blown out by Carolina. Like, I know that's how this whole thing is going to end. So you're watching, especially that week of them getting ready for that Carolina game. It's so fascinating because of the way the conversation went in the building that week, and you know the result.
Right.
It was kind of cool. But I will say a couple guys stood out. Larry Fitzgerald and just the way the guys on that team react to him. And the way that he wore that loss, I mean, it was devastating just watching him react to it because, look, this is a guy 12 years into his NFL career. He doesn't know.
Right.
You know, he doesn't know if he's ever going to get another chance.
And he was on the brink once.
Right. I mean, he just doesn't know. And watching everyone else kind of feel that for him, and at, like, that locker room afterwards, everyone's trying to, you know, we'll be back next year, and Larry's just still sitting in his locker with his head down. He doesn't even want to turn around. I think he knows the camera's behind him, and he's probably crying. He didn't want anybody to see just how emotional he was after losing that football game. And the other guy that I thought was just an absolute star was Calais Campbell. My gosh.
He's a beast, man.
That guy, and he's so fun. He's got this big personality in the locker room.
He's a friendly giant.
Yeah, I mean, he's a really, really cool guy, and obviously Arians as well.
He's one of the biggest kind of defensive ends in the league. I know he's a 3-4 end, and they tend to run a little big, but he is one of the biggest out there, if not the biggest 3-4 end out there. Just a massive
super
man.
Guy, too. Yeah.
I think it was Bob McManaman writes for the Arizona Republic. I had on Sirius a couple months ago, and we were talking about what's going to happen after this year because, you know, they have some up-and-coming guys like J.J. Nelson in that wide receiver core that not a lot of people know about. Of course, John Brown had his first 1,000-yard season. Michael Floyd will be a free agent next year, and we said if it came down to a choice between Fitzgerald and Floyd, who do you think the Cardinals would keep? He said there would be a revolt in Arizona if they let Larry Fitzgerald go. That basically, now,
they love,
you know,
that guy.
At some point, you know, we've seen icons leave, so he's not any better off than Unitas or several other guys that, you know, Joe Namath, whatever. Icons leave too, and that may happen, but it didn't seem like, as long as he can play, that they're interested, and they're a little down, I think, on Floyd from what I've heard, although who knows? I think he's still a very talented guy as well. So
it's hard to imagine after watching that series, that team moving on from Fitz. I mean, just with the way that everybody feels about
franchise.
Fitz.
Right.
Yeah.
He's the heart and soul of the franchise. There's no question about it. All right, we'll take a timeout here. Come back. We'll get more of your calls in at 641-1010. Also, your texts on the text line driven by Duval Ford at the same number. The Jaguar article in USA Today in our Focus Next, saying Jaguar fans have suffered long enough, owner Shad Khan expects to win in 2016. That's the headline. We'll discuss it next right here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, this doesn't have direct bearing on the National Football League, which is kind of our forte around here, of the Jaguars and the NFL, but it's such a big story and has been in football. I think it bears mentioning, Tony. I'm reading from a synopsis on Deadspin right now. A newly unsealed report from a risk management expert found 6 different instances where sexual abuse allegations against former Penn State assistant coach Jerry Sandusky were either witnessed by other coaches or reported directly to university officials, including a 1976 allegation where one alleged victim made a report directly to head coach Joe Paterno. It details what Sandusky is alleged have done to the boy, which I'm not going to get into here. You can read the story for yourself. But he testified that he specifically told Paterno directly that Sandusky had sexually assaulted him, and Paterno ignored it. Question, is it accurate that Coach Paterno quickly said to you, I don't want to hear about any of that kind of stuff, I have a football season to worry about, the man's lawyer asked him in 2014 under questioning. Quote, in the answer, quote, specifically, yes. I was shocked, disappointed, offended. I was insulted. I said, is that all you're going to do? You're not going to do anything else? End quote. Paterno, the man testified, just walked away. And there's your guy. All you diehards, oh, they're a bunch of liars. I don't know how many people were still on that side who aren't dyed-in-the-wool Nittany Lion fans. But this Joe Paterno, I don't care what good he did. He's a horrible, horrible, horrible human being. He's not worse than Jerry Sandusky, who is extremely, you know, the lowest rung of society, but he was an enabler of that, it appears, and just the weight of the evidence is overwhelming, so it's tough,
yes,
I think,
it
to deny it at this point, you know?
I'm still surprised Penn State's playing football. I really am. I was surprised when the story came out with the details that we had then. I mean, I read the grand jury indictment, at the time, and I am stunned.
And they lessened the penalties, Tony.
Yeah, that Penn State is playing football. I just can't believe it.
Do you expect severe penalties? I know this is not NFL related, but do you expect severe penalties for Baylor? Do you think the NCAA should get involved with Baylor?
Should they? I don't know all the details of the situation, but yeah, why wouldn't you be involved with a program that seems like they're out of control?
Right. I've heard some people say the legal system should be the ones taking care of this, not the NCAA.
Well, the NCAA can't put them in jail, but the NCAA can put the kind of sanctions that the NCAA does. You know, I don't see why it's one or the other. Why can't it be both, right? I mean, you would have, if you did something illegal, you'd have repercussions with the law. You'd also have repercussions in your place of work, right? I mean, you might get fired. You might get suspended, whatever the case may be. So I don't think it's much different than that. All right, I do want to get to this story. So let's hit some of the highlights here. Shad Khan in USA Today. Yesterday was the byline by Tom Pelissero, USA Today Sports. And it starts off with Shad saying there's no magic number. In other words, how many wins they have to have. But Shad does say, quote, we should have ambitions for the postseason now. Talking about the fan base, I think we suffered long enough. He said this as they described him chuckling during a recent interview. It's been painful. So he wasn't pounding his fist saying, we've suffered long enough. That's it, Gus. Okay, it's now or never. So he was saying it kind of, you know, self-deprecatingly, like, oh, my gosh, it's been tough. But
yeah.
As he said,
we've suffered long enough.
We have suffered long enough that we knew it wasn't going to be the quick fix, and here we are now. And not only that the Jags should expect to be competitive, but it should expect it to be sustainable. And I think that's right. The question is, Tony, in reading this story, and I can't in 2 or 3 minutes give you every nuance of it, Shad Khan mentioned words to the effect of, we love Gus and what he brings, and we want it to be Gus that we win with, right? Which, again, I think Shad Khan really believes in the overall direction that Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley have laid out to him and feels like the talent is there on the team. Now, clearly, they can't go 5-11 again. At least I say clear to me that you can't go 5-11 again and bring back your head coach who's averaged 4 wins in his first 3 years. But I think Shad Khan is saying, look, and I'm not trying to put words in his mouth, but I guess I am. You know, what if we're 500, but we're looking good, and we lose a couple of heartbreakers, you know, and we're an eyelash away from being a 10-win team. We're heading in the right direction. I don't think there's, you know, we've heard people, some fans say, definitively, have to have a winning record, have to win 10 games, have to do this, have to. I don't think that Shad Khan's thinking that way.
I don't know that he's thinking that way, and there's certainly no reason for him or Bradley or Caldwell or anybody to put a number on it, so it's not going to happen, and it's certainly, they haven't put a number on it during this entire offseason. It's not going to occur sometime in the next 3, 4, 5 weeks where magically now Shad Khan, the owner, is going to come out and say, well, if Gus doesn't win 9 games, I'm going to fire him. We're past that point. We don't know exactly what the expectations are for Gus Bradley to keep his job, but it certainly feels like, I think Shad Khan's comments are a reflection of the conversations that he's probably had with Gus and Dave, where it's everybody expects it to happen now. And I don't know exactly what it means for it to happen now or what that looks like, but the expectations are being risen inside that building. Everyone knows that there is an expectation in 2016 that has not been here for the first 3 years with this team. The roster's better. They've developed this young talent, especially on the offensive side of the ball. It's time for there to be results, and I'm not sure how much the results have to be positive for them to say we're going to keep going in this direction. That's unclear, but it certainly has to be better than it's been for Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell to keep their jobs going forward.
Interesting to me, anyway, that how many interviews Shad was involved with in terms of draft prospects. He said he interviewed personally 30 draft prospects this year because, as he put it, I don't know about talent of football, but I do know about people, although he did say, obviously, the decisions are left up to Caldwell and Bradley, whom Khan calls, quote, two of the best guys in the business. Some other quotes from Shad Khan. I'm not saying if we win, this is the blueprint for everybody. It's the blueprint for us. Now we have the talent in place, and I think if you are a Jaguar fan, you should be excited and you should have some expectations that we're going to be a sustainable winning organization now. I have expectations that not only are we going to be better, but we're going to be sustainable, and this isn't going to be a flash in the pan where we're just going to flame out. Well, you got to flame on before you flame out. And that, you know, you're telling the fans you should have an expectation to be a winning organization. Winning organization, to me, a winning organization is not an 8-8 organization.
Nope.
Right? You're, to me, I can understand if you go 8-8 and that's not satisfying to some fans, then they could point to that and say, you said winning, not breaking even organization. Now, you can also say winning organization doesn't necessarily only refer to wins and losses. Are you, you know, developing players? Are you doing all the right things? Blah, blah, blah. Are you stockpiling talent? Are you managing the salary cap? They seem to be doing a lot of these things well. The wins have to come this year. I'm probably not doing the article justice. It's not a ton of groundbreaking new stuff on there, but anytime Shad talks, I think it's worth checking out if you're a Jaguar fan. So you can go to USA Today Sports and find that story from yesterday afternoon, Tom Pelissero. Maybe I'll tweet out the link to that coming up here in just a minute. Let's get Ken in before we break. We'll come back. We've got the state in football and the Honda drive around the NFL. Ken wants to weigh in on the question of the day, which is this. Who is your current favorite NFL player that does not play for your favorite team and why? Ken's on the south side. Now he's on Jaguars Today. Hi, Ken.
Hey, what's going on, man?
What's up, buddy?
Not much, man. Just listening to y'all while I'm out here working in this heat.
Well, don't get too hot, man. It's brutal out there, brother. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
You know
that. Trying to stay hydrated.
All right, so who's your guy?
My favorite player in the league's got to be, and I mean, I'm cheating when I say this because I'm a Jaguar fan, but I can't go any other direction than Allen Hurns, man, because he is the epitome of an underdog story. To come in as an undrafted rookie free agent and to do what he did, a guy who you weren't sure was even going to make the team at one point when he first comes in, to put up, you know, in his two-year career, 1,700 yards, 16 touchdowns. I mean, it's amazing. And then to get a contract like he did, it's well-deserving. He's a great guy outside of football. He's not the rah-rah type. He's got a little chip on his shoulder. I remember he made a statement that said when we started to get all the love in the offseason in regards to what we were doing as far as drafting and free agency, and he said, you know, I don't like all the attention. You weren't with us then. And being a Jaguar fan for so long and struggling through everything that we've gone through, to have a guy say that is true. Don't come around now just because we're going to start doing what we expect to do, what we've always thought we were capable of, and now we have the pieces in place to do. Allen Hurns just is a great football player, man.
All right, Ken, I appreciate it. Not at all on the topic of who's your favorite player that doesn't play for your favorite team. It was a great you know, introduction of Allen Hurns and what he brings to the table. Although I'll say this about players. When they say, oh, don't come around when we start winning. What about the fans that are there when you're losing? Are you apologizing to them for them coming around and you didn't fulfill it? I always hate that. Oh, were you there when we were losing? Yeah, we were. Were you, you know, were you saying I'm sorry when, because I'm supposed to say I'm sorry if I didn't show up when you were losing?
Well, it goes one way or the other, right? It goes that way where don't join us now that we're winning. You can't jump on the bandwagon. And then you have Von Miller. Nobody believed we could win a Super Bowl.
Nobody thought that.
Nobody
thought that the AFC champions could win the Super Bowl. You're right. Von. Von Miller. Wow.
He's like, people started doubting us last year. Yeah, last year you were the favorites to win the Super Bowl in the AFC, you clown. Coming off Peyton Manning in that season he had. Oh my goodness, some of the stuff that athletes hide behind.
By the way, I'm not picking on Allen Hurns. Allen Hurns is everything Ken said. He's a great guy.
Maybe my favorite player on the team.
He's a super great guy, right? Very good player, all those things. But, I mean, it's more to, I guess I think more of when I've been in that locker room so many times, and you have as well, Tony, after they win a game they weren't expected to win. Oh, nobody, none of y'all picked us, none of y'all. So what about all the times we picked you and you lost?
Yeah.
Right? Are you apologizing? Are we supposed to apologize for thinking you weren't going to beat a team that on paper looked better?
Haters. We're supposed to apologize. Bunch of haters.
There really is that mentality, man, that you need to be a cheerleader amongst, not amongst everybody, but amongst certain professional athletes. Like, if you're not, just if you don't believe, no, we don't have to do that. We don't believe you're going 16-0. Okay, neither do you if you're realistic.
Well, we don't have to believe on the level that they have to believe. Like, it becomes this like cocoon just within the locker room. It's this mentality that it feels like it's bred in the NFL, and I don't, in all sports really. And I'm not sure that it's ever going to go away at this point. I mean, that's just
probably
what players do. It's the conversation that coaches have with them. I mean, it's. You can watch All or Nothing. You see it again. I mean, that's the way they talk. inside these NFL locker rooms and meeting rooms. That's the conversation. And so it's not surprising that the players reflect that when they get to stand in front of a microphone when they finally win something.
All right, let's take a timeout. We'll come back to State and Football, the Honda Drive around the NFL, and more coming your way. It's Jaguars Today here live in the 1010XL World Headquarters on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
Oh, it is the dog days of summer when not much goes on in NFL history, but birthdays to celebrate on this July 12th. We'll go back to 1970, former Steelers, Seahawk, I think with the Patriots for a smidge. Linebacker Chad Brown, three-time Pro Bowler, turns 46 years old today.
Well, he was the one giving out the beats at the Super Bowl this year.
Was he giving out beats?
Yeah, it was beat stuff.
Wait, not like Beats by Dre, like beat.
Like beats, like the
nutritional beat drinks.
Yeah, like white
oh, the beat stuff,
beats.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
You got some of that stuff,
yeah,
didn't
I did.
You?
Did I sat down and talked to him for 10 minutes, and I got free beat stuff.
Did that make it into the swag bag this
year?
It
did. Well, I certainly wasn't going
to. You weren't going to imbibe on the beat stuff there?
No.
He's an interesting guy, actually. He's a pretty good interview.
He's
I talked
good,
to him
yeah.
once in the past. Vinny Manuai, born in the state, Tony. Only 36 years old. Vince has been out of the league since he was 30. Man, it'll catch up with you, I guess, if you're a lineman, take all those shots over the years. In eight seasons with the Jags, Vince Manuai started 105 games, had the one season where he only started one game and then was lost due to injury, but it was a pretty steady performer. Most seasons, I think six out of the eight started at least 15 games for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Former backup quarterback here in Jacksonville, Luke McCown, born 1 year later. He was born in 1981. He turns 35 years old today. And former NFL rushing champion LeSean McCoy. How old is LeSean McCoy, Tony?
28.
28 is exactly right. He's one of those guys that's been just seemingly like in his early to mid-20s for a long time, at least to me. Four-time Pro Bowler LeSean McCoy and a two-time first-team All-Pro. And now Carlos Williams with the dad bod.
McCoy.
Making it that much easier to approach the 300 rushes that we all seek so much in our fantasy league.
My favorite LeSean McCoy story, when he was with Philadelphia, where it was never confirmed. LeSean wouldn't say that it's actually something that he did, but there were stories that when he would juke somebody on the field, he would whisper McCoy as he ran by. Like, he would say his own name. So he'd juke you out of your shorts, and then he'd go, McCoy, as what? He ran by. Yeah.
Didn't Derek Jeter allegedly go attaboy Jeets on certain occasions that probably aren't the same occasions that we're talking about? At least that was the rumor, right?
The best LeSean McCoy story was the birthday party he tried throwing while he was still in Philly. Remember that? It was a females only, 21 and over.
Yes.
And you had to sign a confidentiality agreement to go.
Right. Mm-hmm. All he needed was the boat.
Send in some headshots. And, yeah, oh, wow.
And it was Minnesota Vikings love boat all over again. At least he wanted. I think they canceled that when word got out.
Oh, the stories of that boat.
Oh, my God. The boat. Yeah, the boat. But I'm talking about McCoy, they canceled his birthday.
Yeah,
extravaganza, right? To when he got the pushback on. Anyway, that's what you got. That's this date
McCoy.
In football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Brent Grimes and his wife Miko left Miami offseason when Brent was signed by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in free agency. Miko has been a loud voice on social media for several years. There are some that believe that is part of the reason that Miami didn't work harder to re-sign Grimes. And it isn't stopping now that Grimes is in Tampa. Miko is still not happy with the Dolphins, apparently. Tweeted this out yesterday, quote, "Gotta respect Ross, who is the Dolphins owner, for keeping his Jew buddies employed. But did he not see how Tannenbaum, the Dolphins vice president of football operations, put the Jets in the dumpster with that Sanchez deal? Considering that the Bucs ownership group are descendants of Jewish immigrants from Lithuania and actually lost family during the Holocaust, I can't imagine a comment like that is going over very well." Miko Grimes has clarified, saying that the comment wasn't meant to be offensive, but to point out that the truth that people tend to hire and look out for their own, and that she is not a racist. However muddy her intentions and comments were, one thing is clear: Miko Grimes isn't done sharing her opinion with the world about what is going on with her husband anytime soon. Buffalo Bills running back, as you mentioned, Mike Carlos Williams, will reportedly have to start training camp doing conditioning work on the side instead of being a full participant. No, Williams isn't returning from an injury. He has reportedly put on upwards of 20 to 25 pounds that he attributes to his fiance's pregnancy, or as Pro Football Talk described it, Williams could start the Bills training camp on the sideline because of his dad bod. And Von Miller continues to insist that he will not sign the franchise tag and play under it for the $14 million guaranteed this season if he and the Broncos don't work out a long-term deal by July 15th. That's this Friday's deadline to get a deal done with franchise players. Miller told ESPN, quote, "I've never really played for money. It's bigger than that for me. It's a league-wide problem that I feel like I'm in a situation to help out with." So he continues to say he's not going to play if he's going to have to play under a franchise tag this year. And it would allow him to hit free agency next offseason.
Well, if they don't franchise him next offseason. Right. Because they could continue to do that. Shut up, Von Miller. I don't have a bunch of indignation for him because Miko Grimes tops it, and Isaiah Crowell really tops them both. But nevertheless, I'll start with Von Miller, Tony. It doesn't make any sense in any way. It's a league-wide issue. No, it's not. It's an issue for about a half dozen guys every year because half the guys who get tagged love it and sign it immediately. And they're like, wow, that's a big, fat, guaranteed one-year deal that I'm getting. And, yeah, guess what? It does it restrict you and your ability to find your true market value? Yes. Guess what? You agreed to it. Okay? So did every other player who voted yes, thumbs up for the CBA. So shut it. Okay? You don't have any, you're not in a situation to help out. You know what you can help out? The next time there's a labor impasse and you can say, we're not going to play unless we get rid of the franchise tag. Good luck with that because it only impacts about a half dozen of you every year and the rank and file are never going to fight for that.
No, they're not. And honestly, what the Broncos are doing with the franchise tag is what the tag was intended to be.
To not let your best player walk out the door with no compensation.
This is what the franchise tag was supposed to be. It's that teams use it on kickers and punters and players that aren't the franchise. That's the absurdity of the franchise tag. Not when the Denver Broncos say, we're not letting Von Miller walk away just because we couldn't figure out a way to work out a long-term deal in January. We're not letting this guy walk away. They're using it the right way, and if he wants to fight the fight, good luck to you.
Look, he has every right to not sign,
yeah.
But to suggest that it's somehow unfair, you voted it in, all right? You knew it. I told this to Maurice Jones-Drew countless times about things that he doesn't like about the league. You voted in. Well, yeah, but if we didn't vote, we weren't going to play. Bah, and there you go.
There you go.
They've got leverage. It's called business.
Right. Why do you think the NBA and Major League Baseball Players Associations are so good? They've walked
They're
away.
They're willing to walk away.
They've done it.
And not have money.
Yeah.
And maybe if the, I don't know, maybe enough guys in the NFL don't manage your money well enough. And I get it. You don't get paid except for those game weeks. So you're not making a bunch of money in the off season, and then you walk away on the eve of the season. It's not like you've got a big bankroll saved up. There are a lot of guys in the NFL that don't have that kind of money in the bank that they can afford to do that. But the owners know that. And until you're ready to bite the bullet and have a labor stoppage if you want to get rid of it. And that's the thing. It affects so few people. Are they going to go to bat for the franchise tag to get rid of it? Because then the owners are going to want another big concession in some other area,
yeah,
like maybe
not
a 17th game or something along those lines. Miko Grimes is just a nut job, okay? Jay Glazer, who is Jewish and a friend of her husband, Brent, took offense to it and tweeted to her, and you know, basically to that effect. And she basically called him a coward for going after her on Twitter, which is all she does is go after people on Twitter. She's just a nut job, and I pity Brent Grimes. Brent Grimes, you know that he has no hand in that relationship, man. Miko's running that house. There's no question that Miko's running that house, he can't. He, you know, maybe he doesn't care. He's employed, so I guess there's that. The Bucks are the ones who got sucked into the "I'm going to quit Twitter" thing.
According to Greg Aumann, who is the Bucks writer for the Tampa Bay Times, Miko Grimes has added some clarification to her comments about, it says, anyone offended by the Jew Buddy's comment is diving in front of bullets.
Okay.
All right, whatever. Just shut up. Honestly, if we never hear again from Miko Grimes, it'll be too soon.
I was going to say, it's not like we're looking for a story out of Miko Grimes.
Right.
When you create a story, you create
stuff.
A story.
Right.
Yeah.
When you say inflammatory stuff, people are going to react to it, okay? Finally, you want to talk about inflammatory.
Holy cow.
Isaiah Crowell is a piece of garbage. I'm sorry. He tweets, and look, I understand there are a lot of emotions, a lot of things going on with all the shootings, with, you know, both, you know, African-American civilians being killed, police officers being sniped and killed. And so there are a lot of things going on. But in reaction to everything going on, Isaiah Crowell tweets out, and he claims he did this before the officers were killed in Dallas, but he tweets out a picture, an artist rendering, it looks like, of a police officer on his knees with his hands tied behind his back and a faceless man because they kind of black out the face, all dressed in black with an American flag draped around his neck, slicing the officer's throat from behind. I mean, are you kidding me? And so he apologized and said, I was outraged and upset by the deaths of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile, along with so many others. I also am outraged and saddened by the attacks in Dallas and the death of the five honorable police officers. And he does mention them by name who were providing protection while trying to keep peace. We have to be better as a society. It's not about color. It's about what's right and wrong. I was very wrong in posting that image. Every single life matters. Every death as a result of violence should be treated with equal outrage and penalty. And he went on to say that doesn't reflect his actual values. My values and beliefs do not match that image. Why'd you post it?
Why'd you post it? And I just can't imagine. Like, I've heard Crowell interviewed before, and I can't imagine him putting together those sentences.
Oh, I'm sure it was written for
that's
him.
That's something that an agent or somebody with the Browns, somebody put together for Crowell to put out to try to put out this fire.
You know, there's a lot of ills in society. They don't get solved by advocating even, you know, implicitly the murder of police officers, period.
This, de-escalation honestly, of violence is not
if
answer.
Somebody in the Jags did that, Tony, I'd want him off the team.
Me too.
I would. I'd want him off the team. And I mean, that's beyond the pale. And the Browns have said an apology won't be enough. They haven't said what will be enough, but that's where things stand with Isaiah Crowell. Wow, what a guy.
I'm surprised he didn't say he was hacked or something. I mean,
no, he at least admitted that he's the one who did it. And, you know, I was very wrong. I was very wrong in posting that image. I don't think people – would you ever post something like that? Come on.
Never.
If you didn't feel that way, right? I almost feel like you're saying I was very wrong to post it. I should have kept that thought to myself, you know. I'm glad we found out that that's how he thinks because I don't buy the apology whatsoever. People apologize when they get caught. That's what they do. I'm yet to see the person who comes forward and say, you know what, I screwed up. And before you find out about it, let me tell you how I screwed up and how sorry I am. And I'd have a little bit of more leniency and respect coming your way. But anyway, if we did some kind of turd of the day, we had plenty of candidates. But Isaiah Crowell wins in a walk, I think, on that one. All right, we'll turn the page. We'll welcome in Jim Wyatt from the Tennessee and in Nashville as we talk about the Jags division rival, the Tennessee Titans, and what they'll bring to the table in 2016. That'll come up next on Jaguars Today here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, time to talk about one of the Jags division rivals. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you. And Tony, from the department of I'm getting too old, I probably referenced Jim Wyatt from the Tennessean and Nashville a half dozen times this morning. Okay, he, of course, used to be an award-winning sports writer with the Tennessean and Nashville, and now he is working for Titans Online, the official website of the Tennessee Titans. And how quickly I forget. It's in a fog, but we've eventually come around to getting it right. Good morning, Jim. How are you, sir?
Good morning. How you doing today?
We're doing good, man. We're doing really well down here. We're excited about where the Jags stand. I'm curious to see where Tennessee fans are on their football team. First pick in the draft indicates you got a lot of work to do, but I think they feel like they found their quarterback and they've made some key acquisitions this offseason. How bullish on the season do you think the typical Tennessee fan is right now?
Well, I think people are excited, and I'll say this, and I look at the division, I look at Jacksonville and look at everything that they did, and I think I can understand why people are optimistic there. I got a chance to spend some time with Jalen Ramsey. He's obviously a Nashville kid, and he was here on a visit, and I went to his pro day, and I think a lot of people were hoping the Titans would pick him at number one, and he's such a fine young man. I hope he does well there. But I think what the Titans did this offseason excited their fan base as well, because you mentioned, you got Jack Conklin coming in with eighth overall pick, but the addition of DeMarco Murray, Derrick Henry, Rashard Matthews from Miami, added a new member of the offensive line, and Ben Jones. And there's a lot of momentum here. There's no question about it. It's strange for a team that's come off, you know, five wins in the past 2 years, but the fan base is excited because of the quarterback because of the new acquisitions, because of you know, the new GM and John Robinson, and it's as optimistic as I've seen the fan base here in a long time.
Jim, you mentioned the fact that they brought in DeMarco Murray, Derrick Henry in that backfield as well. It's certainly from Jacksonville here. Looks like they want to be a power-running football team this year. Do you think that is what is going to be the identity of this offense, a power team?
I do. I think the biggest thing they want to do is take pressure off of Marcus Mariota, and I think the best way to do that is to give him more weapons and let him distribute the football a little bit more, build an offensive line around him. Certainly he's going to be a key part of it, and he's still going to make plays. But I think the focus is now not necessarily just having to stop Marcus Mariota. You've got to worry about some other guys. And DeMarco Murray, I think, will end up being the workhorse in this backfield with Derrick Henry. But they're going to run the football. There's no doubt about that. You know, that's what they brought DeMarco Murray in here to do. That's why they drafted Derrick Henry. And if you're able to run the ball, you know, I think that opens things up for Mariota and keeps people, you know, keep people on their heels a little bit.
Jim, it was a good season, certainly as a rookie campaign for Mariota. The wins weren't there, but just in terms of the poise and how, what he got done. What area, give us an area that you felt like he exceeded your expectations and another area where you think he might have the most work to do?
Well, he really impressed me from the very beginning, and I guess I shouldn't have been surprised. But I look, if you look at his history, it's just how good of a job he does with protecting the football and making good decisions and not making rookie mistakes. I mean, we went through training camp and a lot of people, kind of poke fun, I think, at the national media for keeping track of his streak without throwing an interception in training camp. And it was like 14 days, which is was unprecedented. I've covered the team since 99. I saw the McNairs and saw the Hasselbecks and the Vince Youngs and the Jake Lockers. And, I can't ever remember a quarterback going, 14, 15 days of training camp without throwing a pick. And then the season starts and he continued to make, those four touchdowns, no interceptions in the first game against Tampa. And he put up good numbers and was great in the red zone. You don't see a rookie coming in and having so much success in the red zone. So, and his poise and how quickly he was embraced by his teammates, you got to keep in mind that he came into a locker room that where a lot of people thought Zach Mettenberger, should have been given a chance to be the starter, and that conversation went away pretty quickly. So he did that. He did a great job fitting in, making good decisions. I think areas he could improve. I mean, he tell you himself that his accuracy and his completion percentage and with the deep ball wasn't great, and that has to improve. I mean, if you're going to loosen up the defense, you've got to hit on some of that stuff, and he didn't have a lot of success there. I think he's got to be probably quicker at the line of scrimmage, which will help him, help him in certain situations. That's another area where he can improve. He can't take hits. He missed four games last season with an injury. A lot of the time, it wasn't his fault because he was just getting he was under pressure and getting hit too much. Sacked 38 times in 12 games, but he's got to make sure he doesn't put himself in harm's way as well. And that's sometimes easier said than done.
Jim, you mentioned the sack number there. We've talked about the running backs, the identity they want to have as this power running team. Are they good enough up front on the offensive line to allow them for the offense to have that kind of identity?
Well, I mean, I guess time will tell. I think the big addition, Jack Conklin was a big addition, but he is a rookie. He'll be playing, when they kick off the season against Minnesota, he'll be starting his first NFL game. And I do think they like his mindset and like his skill set and think he's going to fit in well. I think probably the biggest addition on the offensive line this offseason was signing Ben Jones, center out of Houston, who has been durable. He's been tough. He's a physical guy. He's kind of set the tone here with his work ethic. He's one of these guys that's always in the building, even during this long stretch before training camp. He's here working out, and he's going to make him better in the middle of the offensive line. I think Taylor Lewan, with another year in his belt, should be better at left tackle. Chance Womack, they expect him to be better. this year as well. And then the big question mark is who's going to play left guard. Quint Spain's worked there this offseason, but there's probably three or four guys in that competition. It should be better, and I think the depth should be pretty good inside. But they lost Byron Bell this offseason with an injury that ended his season. And so that puts depth a little bit of a question mark. You just can't afford to have big injuries moving forward, because then that, you know, makes it even thinner. But I think on paper it should be better, and they should be better protecting Mariota this year.
Jim White here with us, TitansOnline.com. Jim, they had Rashad Johnson from Arizona. Not a ton of changes, it looks like, to the projected starting lineup on defense. Kevin Dodd, we'll see how quickly he comes along out of Clemson. How good do you think they'll be on that side of the football?
Well, I think, you know, they in their mind, they're getting Jason McCourty. You know, Jason McCourty missed, I think, all but four games last season with the an injury that ended up requiring surgery, and they just pretty much shut him down. So he's the starter they played with, you know, the defense played with pretty much all last season. Get him back. He's had a good offseason. Derek Morgan, you know, had, I think, 3.5 sacks in the first four games. Maybe it was 4.5 sacks in the first four games of the year. It was off to a great start. Then he suffers a shoulder injury, and he wasn't the same the rest of the year. He ends up finishing on IR. So two new starters in their mind back and helping them in Morgan and McCourty. You mentioned Rashad Johnson. He should help. I think they feel like that, you know, some Austin Johnson, who they drafted, a big defensive lineman out of Penn State, should help. I think the addition of, you know, Kevin Byard, who I don't know will play a whole bunch in the defense early, but he's a safety out of MTSU who should make an impact on this team in some fashion as a rookie. I think and then just the maturation process for some of these other guys should help. One other guy I ought to mention is Bryce McCain, who I think will end up being this team's starting nickel, and he's done it in this league for a while and did it with the Dolphins last year. He should help solidify that secondary as well.
Jim, looking at the wide receiver core, Dorial Green-Beckham coming back for his second year, obviously, with the Titans this year. Kind of an up-and-down rookie campaign for that guy. Obviously, a really great athlete physically. What are the expectations for him going into year two?
Well, they hope he makes a big jump from last year. But, you know, you just I will say this. I'm not saying anything that Mike Mularge hasn't said, but that's one position group where there's, you know, they need to step it up. And Mike Mularge said that many times during this offseason, that Dorial Green-Beckham, you know, he didn't run with the first team a good part of this offseason because Tajay Sharp, a fifth-round pick out of UMass, was running with the first group opposite Rashard Matthews and with Kendall Wright in the slot. And while that's great that Tajay Sharp has progressed to that point, he probably shouldn't, in reality, a rookie, never played a game, probably shouldn't be running with the ones ahead of guys like Dorial Green-Beckham and Justin Hunter. And so some guys need to step it up. And that's Mike Mularkey's words there. I mean, they're going to have to be in better shape when training camp begins. They're going to have to be focused and consistent all the way through. I think certainly Kendall Wright, I think he's poised to have a really good year playing a lot in the slot. I really like what I've seen out of Rashard Matthews. But, you know, Dorial Green-Beckham, Justin Hunter, those guys are kind of on the spot. They really need them to settle in and be good. And I thought Green-Beckham had a good rookie year last year, but expectations are higher going into year two.
You know, Jim, down here, nobody's going to be rooting for the Titans, but there are a lot of Derrick Henry fans. He's from nearby Yulee High School, where he set the high school rushing mark, the all-time rushing mark. We saw what he did at the University of Alabama. I know probably off-season is not the time to get the full picture, because he's the kind of guy that's going to be most effective when the pads go on and he starts to wear down defenses a little bit. But what are the early returns to the team? Is the team pleased with what they see in Derrick Henry? Did they get what they expected?
I think so, Mike. And I tell you what impressed me the most about him is how he catches the ball so well. I think he only caught 19 balls at Alabama. And obviously, when you're running, just handing the football, letting them run for 2,200 yards, you don't need to throw them the ball that much. But he impressed me with his hands And I think they'll take advantage of that this season. You know, his speed when he gets into the open field is, you know, was really impressive to me, the way he kind of runs away with people, being such a big back. It is early, and I know I talked to Sylvester Kroom about him before they broke at the end of June and said he's going to be a good player, but he's still got to work through some things. And just, you know, it's not easy being a rookie, and he's going to have some growing pains that they know are coming. And that's why they feel so good about having DeMarco Murray, because he's been through all that. But in time, they feel like they got a steal in Derrick Henry in the second round, and they believe he's going to really help the team. I think he's going to help them in 2016, certainly, but I think, you know, in years to come as well.
How big of an improvement is reasonable as we get ready to wrap up here with you, Jim?
Well, I mean, I think it's definitely not unrealistic to think they could double, you know, last year's win total, which isn't saying the whole lot. But I think this is a team, and I look at Jacksonville the same way. I mean, you know how it is in this league. You know, so many games that come down to the fourth quarter, come down to making a play or two here and there. I think this team's going to be in the majority of the games it's scheduled to play this year. And it's just a matter of whether you can win some of those games. So I think if it's anywhere from a 6 to 7 win team, and if you find a way to make some of those plays, you know, never know. It's a 9 or 10 win team. And I think Eddie George, I talked to him not too long ago, and he kind of looks at this team and reminds him a little bit of that 99 team. And not to bring up a bad memory there, but he said that, you know, but he said that, you know, that team kind of was 8-8, 8-8, really was trying to get over the hump, couldn't win some of those close games. They go to Jacksonville early in the season, Samari Roll intercepts Mark Brunell in the end zone in the pouring down rain, and he said suddenly things started to click, and the team started to believe, started to win some of those close games, and then that team really took off. And he thinks if this team can win some games early and build some confidence, then can surprise some people.
All right. He is Jim White. He's covered the Titans since 1999 and most recently with Titans Online, the official website of the dreaded Tennessee Titans Online, on Twitter, I should say, at J Wyatt Sports. Jim, always a good sport. We appreciate having you on, buddy. We look forward to talking to you throughout the season.
Okay, appreciate it. Have a good week. We'll talk to you before too long.
You got it, buddy. Jim Wyatt, the Titans Online group up there. As you know, we put it, he's the John Osher of the Tennessee Titans now, Tony. I'll say this about Derrick Henry, and I think I may have mentioned this before on the air, but I did a show recently with Phil Savage, and he, of course, is the color commentator for the University of Alabama, and he also runs the Reese's Senior Bowl. But I asked him specifically about Derrick Henry's pass-catching ability, right? Mm-hmm. And he said at the Alabama Pro Day, they had a rash of injuries at wide receiver, and he wanted Jay Coker to have the best chance to improve or to prove, you know, his ability. So he went out there, wound up at wide receiver, knew every route, ran them. You would have thought that he had been playing tight end, they said, for the team. He thinks he could be a Pro Bowl-level tight end. And he just said, basically, look, we had Kenyon Drake. And
I was about to say, they had a third down back.
Right. We had a guy who was an excellent pass catcher. He was already carrying the ball in a crazy amount of times. They didn't want to overwork him. He carried it more than they had planned to give it to him. And so, you know, for people, sometimes just because you don't do something doesn't mean you're not capable of doing that. So,
no. And one last note there on the Titans before we're going to turn our attention to the fan feedback spotlight here in just a moment. But Tajay Sharp, who we mentioned, the fifth-round pick, who's running with the first team right now, basically running out of the slot with that team, which is where Kendall Wright has lived, basically since he got drafted there. So it'll be interesting to see how they want to work all that out. But Sharp caught 111 passes in 12 games last year.
Mm.
111 catches in 12 games last year. So he has been a target monster for the last couple of years. He caught 85 his junior year there at UMass. He was a fantasy star from a college perspective last year. So he's been a catch machine. We'll see how Tennessee winds up using him. He's not like Green Beckham, where he's going to go up and get the ball. He's that slot guy. Like, that's where he belongs, but he's been very good at that, at least in a college role.
Right. He's listed as a starter in a 3-wide set.
Yep.
Sharp is, with Wright and Harry Douglas being the other two. Boy,
that's not a lot of size there.
Already Doriel Green Beckham a little bit on the prove it to me. I understand Justin Hunter. It's been a few years now, yeah. Justin Hunter. I think that ship may have already left port, but Doriel Green Beckham, maybe that's just a little, you know, coach speak, in-house motivation. Pick up your play because he does have a world of athletic ability. Hopefully he won't express that against the Jacksonville Jaguars this year. Got to take a timeout. We'll come back. As Tony mentioned, the fan feedback spotlight coming your way. Who is your favorite current NFL player that does not play for your favorite team and why? We'll get to those responses coming up next here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
This is the quarterback here, Jacksonville Jaguars, Blake Bortles, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, got to address this one here, Tony, on the text line, because there's at least always one, at a minimum, always one. Text line driven by Duval Ford. This is in reference to me not being happy with Isaiah Crowell tweeting out a picture seemingly advocating murdering police officers, okay?
Hot take.
He says, why are you getting so mad? This man is outraged that so many black men are getting killed by our so-called policemen that are sworn to protect us, but also really don't. You mad about that, but you didn't hear, I didn't hear any outrage over Mrs. Sterling or Mr. Castile. You mad about a picture, but why not mad about those same cops killing black men? You don't know what the hell I'm mad about, all right? You can't be mad about one thing without, I mean, by that reasoning,
it's not at the exclusion
anything,
of the other.
Right, anything below that offense, I can't be mad about ever. What are you talking about, you idiot? Seriously, you have no idea. How, do you think I want any innocent person shot over anything? Are you really that stupid? Really? I mean, don't be that dumb. If you think it's acceptable for anyone to advocate murdering, I'm not talking about defending themselves. There's a picture of a cop on his knees with his hands tied behind his back and his throat slit from behind. If you think that's acceptable, I would be just as outraged if someone tweeted out a picture of a black motorist being shot and said the caption, he deserved it. He shouldn't have reached for the glove box or whatever. But no, that didn't happen. We're a football show. We deal with what football players do and say. And that's the context that we're in. We're not a political show. We're not anything else. Don't assume you know anything about me, idiot. Anything. All right? Just cut it off right there. That just ticks me off. Just, you can't be mad about one thing without expressing outrage at something else. There's always something worse that's happening in the world than what's happening to you, okay? So by that reaction, we're not allowed to be upset about anything but the very most vile thing at the very top. I can't be upset about anything. Can't be upset if my kid screws up at school. I can't be upset about anything because worse things are happening in the world. Stop it, okay? Don't assume you know anything about me. Just cut it right there. Enough. Moving on. Let's go to a fan feedback question of the day. Get out of the window. I don't think. Seriously, you're distracting me now. Enough. All right. Fan feedback question of the day was, who is your favorite player currently in the NFL that does not play for your favorite team and why? Tony, please save me here.
Here's what we got from Cameron. J.J. Watt says, J.J. Watt embodies everything you would want in an ambassador for your team, sport, and fan base. That's a Jaguars fan saying that. That's unbelievable.
Even self-awareness?
I guess so. From Justin.
What was his name? Who said that?
Cameron,
okay.
From Justin. Julian Edelman, the man has the heart of a lion. Watch him play, injuries or not. Dude is an inspiration. From Irish Jaguar, Cam Newton, fun to watch, enjoys himself, and the type of person his success pisses off is awesome. From Duval Doom, Vontae's perfect. Ugh. Because he does what we all want to do to the Steelers, take cheap shots. From John, Big Ben, after Jags 07 playoff win, he patiently waited off camera for DG9 to finish his interview. I remember that. That was kind of a cool moment. And from Cristiano, Cairo Santos, the Chiefs kicker, he's from a country I like. Hashtag patriotic tweet. Cristiano's always got the Brazil angle.
And why would you blame him on that? On Facebook, Chad said, I honestly think Russell Wilson is my favorite player. He's a great dude, an exceptional player who's kind of the underdog. Jason said Odell Beckham Jr. because he makes some of the most impressive catches he's ever seen. Josh also went with J.J. Watt. He is excommunicated as well. Such a great player and plays with a nonstop motor. How about this one? Kevin went with Marcus Mariota, huge Duck fan and such a great kid. It killed me when the Mayo drafted him. Cameron went with Quan Alexander. Looking forward to seeing him get through a full season down. He's with Tampa, right? And Derrick Henry was voted by Thomas Crowder. Again, this show's not a political show, so I don't want to end on a bad note. Don't assume because I don't address something that's happening in society that I'm not thinking about or impacted by. Don't assume you know anything about me because I'm upset about something and I didn't mention the thing that you're most upset about right now. And I understand why you're upset about things, okay? I get it. I'm an aware person. I know what's going on.
We all get it, yeah.
Right, Tony, I'm just trying to speak for myself because I'm the one who, you know, said what I said about Isaiah Crowa, and I stand by it. There's no excuse to, if a Jacksonville Jaguar expressed that on Twitter, I'd want him out.
Me too.
Likewise, if they expressed something on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, I'd feel the same way. You know what I'm saying? In terms
if it was
of,
the photo you mentioned, if a Jaguars player tweeted out a photo of a black man being killed by a cop and saying he deserved it, I'd say he needs
right.
to go.
Or just a cop. Yeah, exactly. Or insinuating that
either
he deserved it.
Either side of that would make me upset.
This seemed like Isaiah Crowa was insinuating this is a remedy for this. Let's murder police officers. Because, again, in the photo, the police officer is on his knees with his hand tied behind his back, getting his throat cut from behind. This is what Isaiah Crowell chose to send out.
It's the journalist that ISIS murdered.
Is that what it is?
It's the doctored photo of the journalist that ISIS murdered.
And they put a police uniform on him?
Yes. That's what that picture is.
I mean, so you can be outraged at more than one thing. And just because I didn't express outrage at the thing you're most outraged about right now, you don't assume you know how I feel about anything. And we don't try to turn the show into a political forum.
No.
But when it crosses over into the football world, we comment on it. And that's what we did, and we moved on. But when I saw that tweet, obviously someone knows what's going on in my head better than I do, or insinuates that they do, or, you know, whatever. Just stop it.
On the Duval Ford text line from the 772, Dempsey Hacker 2016, this is the ticket I can stand behind.
I can't imagine you two on a political ticket.
And you could stand behind us, you'd never be seen, all right? Think about it.
I think you guys would be kind of a big deal.
Oh, my gosh.
On that note.
Oh, yeah, man.
Let's close this one down. Thanks to Jim Wyatt of the Titans Online website for joining us today. Guess what? Tom McManus in studio tomorrow, double nickels.
Nice.
Meathead 55 joins us in studio talking about his take on what's been going down this offseason with the Jacksonville Jaguars. As you know, it will come unvarnished and straight from the gut with Tommy Mack. So look forward to him joining us tomorrow. Thursday, Ryan O'Halloran, Florida Times Union, back in the fold with us after a little time off. And then Friday, Terrence and Gainesville Ron try to do their best Duval Doom impersonations as they come in and co-host with us on this Friday, as we'll be 2 weeks away from the beginning of training camp. All right, soapbox has been stepped off of, and we move on. The Midday Chalk is coming your way next. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey, signing off for Jaguars Today here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.